this before we start with our program, with the agenda of today. Our request as leaders to familiarize ourselves by introducing ourselves so that we can know exactly at whom we are speaking to or who is next to you. I'll start from my left hand side towards the right hand side, from this side to the other side. Use your mic.
I'm Mbuyisela Jacobs from the Free State.
I'm Herman Groenewald, representing the Northwest Province, member of this committee.
Health leads, KwaZulu-Natal. Thank you.
That's not to be said from the Council for the Built Environment.
Honorable Chairperson and members, my name is Becky Zulu. I'm from the Council for the Built Environment. Thank you.
Continue. I'll be very much grateful if anybody in particular from the department, when you introduce yourself and also indicate about your position in that regard.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of the country. Thank you.
Morning, Committee Chair and members of the committee. My name is Mveza Gokwazube. I'm responsible for operations and my title is the Chief Operations Officer.
Morning, Chairperson and members of the committee. My name is Bonnie Ramaila. I'm from the Council for the Built Environment. My position is Manager, Stakeholder Relations and Communications.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Mandisa Foytela. I'm from the National Department of Public Works, and I'm the Chief Director responsible for strategic management.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Dirk Feldman from Gauteng.
Morning, I'm Priscilla Temba, representing Mpumalanga.
Morning, I'm James Bonner. I'm from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
I'm Sifisongi and this committee is a recession. Thank you.
Kevin Hendricks, Cabinet.
Thank you. Colleagues, ladies and gentlemen, I think we are about to start. Before we start, allow me to comment something. I'll be very much grateful if the information which the following information which I'm going to highlight is going to reach the ears of the DG in this department so that I can have a black and white response. You see, I recall one day in a flight at the airport, sometimes, that's why I requested us to introduce ourselves. I took it very, very seriously so by some of the lamentings of the members or the colleagues in particular from the department. I kept quiet. There was a very, very negative lamenting about us as this portfolio committee because of the meeting which we have called on Friday. The meeting was on Friday. And some of these things are above ourselves because, yes, the meeting, I mean, the lamenting was about this select committee. Because of the meeting which we were called on, it was on Friday. And from the department side, we, on the behalf of this select committee, I wanted to highlight that. Don't make any mistake. You are all of us who are accounting officers, as well as ourselves who are accounting officers. And people mustn't take us just for chickenary debaucheries, as if we don't know what to do. And we, as if we are new. Yes, we might sound new to some of the people, but we know our story. And by saying that, I don't want to mention that particular person at this moment. I even highlighted to that particular person because the lamenting started at the airport as we come down coincidentally with being, I mean, the department focused on us. One takes. Also, the lamenting continues, very negative lamenting. I don't want it to be misquoted. I don't want it, that thing must come out from my own mouth. But I'll request the DG to respond. Maybe to have an amicable solution about that lamenting by some of you members of the officials. And it's good because now I'm cool. That day, what I wanted to do, I wanted to request that person to excuse himself or herself out of this meeting. Because coincidentally, it was very negative. But I don't want to go to, allow me not to go to deep details. The request I'm doing is just openly requesting the DG. That particular person must go to the DG and talk to the DG and apologize black and white so that I can read it to this committee. Because we don't want to be undermined. So that we can be empowered. When doing our oversight, we can be having powers to do our oversight correctly so. Because we didn't nominate ourselves. We're being elected by the people, the majority of the people in this country, to come and represent us, but not some people to come and undermine us. I'm very bitter about that one. But nevertheless, I'll go to the, I was just commenting that I request, in particular, or the, any person who's leading this, to request the DG to intervene, and so that we can read whatever to this committee, because the attack was not concerning me alone, but concerning me as a chairperson as well as the committee. That's why we call the meeting on Friday. Monday to Friday is a working day. Also, when come to and push, if the department, or if we have requested the department to do so, even weekends, if we're having workshops, that's going to be regarded as a working day too. But nevertheless, let us continue. Let us request maybe, because in our program was that we were going to start with the first one, but for the sake that the first one, they are not here, we are requesting maybe the CBE to start.
Honorable Chairperson and honorable members of the Select Committee, good morning, and thank you very much for giving us the opportunity to present to this committee on the work that the CBE does. Chairperson, I also need to apologize for what seems to have been a confusion, that the copy, the electronic copy of the presentation did not get to the committee in time. We had sent the copy a month ago, and I suspect that it was received by perhaps the person who deals with the portfolio committee, and it did not come this side. So our sincere apologies for that, Chair. Chairperson, the presentation focuses on just a short introduction on ourselves and the professional councils that work under the CBE. Then we go briefly through the mandate. And then thirdly, Chairperson, we also just deal with how we have tried in our work and in our business plan to relate our work firstly to the national indicators, and secondly to the State of the Nation address. Fourthly, We also, after the departments of rural development and youth development were established, we then tried to give focus to that as we are dealing with the issues of skills in particular. Number five, Chairperson, we just put there a slide that deals with the provincial distribution of the skills challenge. The organization did a national skills audit last year, and there we're just going to deal with how the picture looks like and perhaps also talk about what interventions we are putting in place to deal with that. And then it's a briefing on the strategic plan and the budget. And then Chairperson will also provide responses to the report of the Auditor General so that we clarify for this Honorable Committee what the issues were and what we've done with those issues. And then lastly, just the challenges that we still need to deal with and the future outlook, Chairperson. By way of introduction, Chairperson, the Council for the Built Environment was established in 2000, reports to Public Works, and it's it has 20 members. These members, Chairperson, are drawn from the professions, from the representatives of government, and from public representatives. So in the split of a 20-member council, 12 will be coming from the professions, so two from each of the six professions, four representing infrastructure departments in government, and four representing the general public. The CBE oversees the work of the professional councils who actually register the professionals. And this is the Engineering Council of South Africa. It's the Council for Architects, Council for Landscape Architects, the Council for Quantity Surveyors, the Council for Project and Construction Managers, and also the Council for Property Valuers. Chair, three of the six professional councils, the one responsible for engineers, architects, and quantity surveyors, existed before the 2000 suite of legislation that established also the CBE. The balance of the other three, Chairperson, only started with the 2000 legislation. And this is important, Chairperson, as I go on in terms of the challenges that are facing those councils, particularly those that were established in 2000. If I can go on, Chair. Although the organization, Chairperson, was established by legislation of 2000, it really only started operating towards the end of 2001. And was listed as a Section 3A public entity in 2006. The vision of the organization really deals with two major areas, Chairperson. One is focusing on sustainable built environment professions. And this is going to be important, Chairperson, when we raise the kind of challenges that some of these professions are having. The second one, Chairperson, is serving and promoting and protecting public interest and also national interest. The mission of the organization is to facilitate integrated development whilst promoting efficiency and effectiveness in the professions. And Chairperson, we need to remember that the professions are not just professions. They are actually part of the economic system of the country. And issues of efficiency and effectiveness, they are important, particularly when we look at the infrastructure program that the government has put in place for the next 5 years. What we are making a point of, Chair, in this slide is that the function of the CBE is really a facilitatory one. The doing of most of the mandates really happens at the level of the professional councils. If I can go to the next slide, Chairperson, this one just lists briefly the mandates. There are 9 mandates, Chairperson, for the CBE. One relates to the protection of the interests of the public, and when we talk later, we will deal with how the organization is doing that. We will know, Chairperson, that there's been a spate of collapses in the construction sector. Part of the work of the professional councils and the CBE, being the appellate body, is to investigate those collapses and take people involved into task, particularly when professionals are involved in those. And we know those things can lead to loss of lives as well, Chairperson. The second one is promoting sustainable built environment. The third one deals with human resources development issues. So the skills issue later will be falling under this mandate, Chairperson. The third one deals with integrated development. The fifth one deals with the issues of health, safety, and environmental protection. Sound governance is the next one, and this deals with not only ourselves, Chairperson, complying with the PFMA and other legislative framework, but also really how we regulate, govern the profession for the benefit of the country. The next one deals with liaison in the field of training, where our council sets standards for education and training for the professions, and also linking through international agreements with other countries. We would know, for example, Chairperson, that the Engineering Council has agreements, one of them being the Washington Accord, and these agreements connect us with other professions in other parts of the world. Number 8, Chairperson, directs us to create a forum where the built environment professions can deal with relevant issues. And lastly, we are required by our mandate to ensure uniform application of norms and guidelines by the different professions, the 6 professions that we regulate. Then, Chairperson, I would like now to move to the strategic objectives of the organization. We have 5 strategic focus areas. One is the area of partnering. It is indeed very clear, Chairperson, that as the CBE, partly because of the structure of the legislation, but secondly because of the magnitude of the issues that we're dealing with, that we cannot deal with these issues as just the CBE. So it requires serious stakeholder mobilization, whether it's industry in terms of skills, whether it's the other professions in terms of issues of registration, for example, whether it's the educational institutions in terms of the programs that they offer in these professions, and so on and so on. The second strategic objective deals directly with the issue of the skills challenge. and it requires us to intervene in improving the performance of the skills pipeline. The third one deals with the aligning what we do and what the councils do with national imperatives. The fourth one deals with the public protection. And lastly, the fifth one deals with the dealing with this issue of disintegration in terms of planning, in terms of implementation, and in terms of accounting for the professions. And this one really focused on consolidating the regulatory, the institutional, and the structural framework that regulates the professions, Chairperson. The Honorable Committee will remember that last year we had a bill, the Built Environment Professions Bill, which was halted when changes happened in the country. And in fact, this was trying to deal with this area, Chairperson. Then, Chairperson, the next one deals with the alignment. The next four slides, Chairperson, just shows how we have tried as an organization to focus our work to the State of the Nation address and also the national indicators, development indicators. So, for example, if we look at the issue of building the economic and social infrastructure and growth and transformation, the response of the CBE in terms of our work is to deal with improving the inflows and throughput in terms of the professional development pipeline. This, Chairperson, is important in a sense that I think we have realized in dealing with the 2010 infrastructure how important the professions have come out. In that, in fact, some of the reasons why some of the bills in terms of building that infrastructure increased was because we needed to get skills from outside this country. So that area is important, Chairperson. The second one that deals with employment and creation of decent work, we try to deal with this through our programs, for example, that deal with the safety, health, and environment, and through creating integrated planning. For the first time, Chairperson, at the beginning of this year, we planned together with our six councils, and we hope that going forward, this is going to assist in terms of integrating the work that we do. In terms of dealing with the issues of poverty and inequality, one of the issues that challenge us, Chairperson, and this comes from our history as well, is that the serious disparities in terms of the outlook of demographic representation of our people in the professions. And we're trying to deal with that through various interventions. The one that deals with sustainable resource management, we try to deal with this, Chair, through our green project. We know that we've been challenged last year with the issue of the energy shortages, and then we are beginning to say to our professions, Chairperson, that when they design, when they plan, when they implement, they need to take into account the sustainability issues. I've spoken about the health and safety one, Chairperson. In terms of education, which is number six on our slide, Chairperson, here the skills development pipeline is at the center of this, and we'll talk about it further, Chair. The next one talks about social cohesion and develop and building a developmental state. We this year, for the first time, Chair, are going to be producing what we call the annual State of the Professions report, which should assist this committee and other oversight committees and the department and the ministry in terms of understanding what the issues are in these professions so that there can be policy interventions to deal with those. In terms of safety and security, we want to strengthen the regulatory infrastructure that we have, particularly where we need to protect the interests of the public as they deal and interact with the professions, which is an area that is still weak in some areas. International relations, we spoke about the international agreements that some of our councils have. Some of them don't, and this actually impinge on the ability of government and the country to bring skills when those skills are required. So we are dealing with expanding these international agreements so that the country can have that flexibility. Lastly, Chair, in terms of governance, we are developing strong monitoring and evaluation system in terms of dealing with all the functions that we deal with as councils, but also creating information base so that we are able to advise government, we are able to advise these oversight committees. Then the next slide, Chairperson, just deals with how we have tried to deal with the issues of rural development and youth issues. As we deal with the functions that we deal with as councils, we deal with professional councils, tertiary institutions, and government in order to ensure that the skills that we are produced and that we bring in these professions are there to assist the country, but also that we are able to direct those developments towards rural development. In terms of the youth development, most of our interventions focus on that because we understand that the youth are the people that are coming into the profession. And so the issues of creating access in particular to these professions is very important, particularly for the historically disadvantaged individuals. We know that some of these professions, Chair, there was legislation that such people were barred from these professions. And so we're dealing with that legacy as well, Chair. Chairperson, the next slide just shows the from our national skills audit. This is just a picture of how we stand in terms of the provincial distribution of the challenge that we have in the different professions. The red color indicates where we have strong deficiencies. The orange or the brownish orange color indicates shortages but that are not as strong. Where we've got yellow, it's where we say we are balanced in terms of supply and demand of those professions. Where we have green and one, Chairperson, or minus one, is where we say we have a bit of a surplus of those certain professions, and then blue with minus two indicate where we've got even bigger surpluses. we will see that Jefferson, in terms of surpluses then, in terms of the blue, we only have two provinces, Limpopo and Gauteng, in terms of the architectural profession and in terms of the architectural profession. The diagram in total, Chatterton depicts that skills shortage varies with provinces. As we can see, Gauteng province was mostly affected by the shortage of engineers, whilst there was high surplus of architects. Limpopo province had a high demand for engineers, high surplus of architects, and low surplus in terms of quantity surveyors. Northwest and Western Cape provinces generally had high demand for engineers and low surplus of architects. KwaZulu-Natal and the Eastern Cape had generally moderate demand for engineers and architects, and high demand for landscape architects. And this is important, Chairperson, to talk about landscape architects. I think in the country, in terms of registered professionals, we have about just over 100 of those professionals, I think about 120 or so. There could be more because registration is not compulsory at the moment. But it actually indicates the shortage in that particular profession. The other issue in terms of this profession is that in terms of racial representation, is still the most challenged one. And as we see, the last point, the landscape architects was in high demand in most provinces where data was available for that. Chairperson, I would now like to just move to the brief briefing on strategic plans and budgets, and I would request our chief financial officer to deal with the issue of the budgets. But I would just like to quickly go through in the next slide through the strategic objectives. As I said earlier, Chairperson, the first one is on the skills challenge, and here we just show the interventions. One of them is the management of the skills pipeline. Chairperson, the skills pipeline, we've divided it into four parts. The first part, we deal with the issue of the challenges of math and science at high school level. The second part, we deal with the issue of university systems, where in our research we have found that there is lots of wastage, in other words, lots of dropout in that system. And we're trying to deal together with institutions of higher learning with that challenge. The third part of the pipeline, Chairperson, is after graduation. You would know, Chairperson, that unlike in the other professions, such as the health professions, if you have trained as a doctor, you got your degree and you go straight to internship and then you register. With our professions, it's not like that. And that is the challenge we're trying to deal with. You graduate and you go away. You find for yourself as a graduate. And if you are lucky, you get employed by a company that is going to expose you to the practical experience that is required for you to register. Most of the people are not that lucky, Chairperson, and therefore they actually take long to register as professionals or end up not registering at all. So we are looking in this pipeline and dealing with that and saying we need to have this, what we call candidacy phase. We need to have a managed program, unlike currently where it is not managed really. It's up to the individual. The last part of the pipeline, Chairperson, is then the issue of continued professional development. And this is also important now. It's become part of the policy of the professional councils, which impact on whether a person is able to renew his or her registration. The next one deals with creating access, particularly for the historically disadvantaged individuals, as I mentioned earlier. The next project deals with monitoring, because as I said earlier, we did not have information to inform policy making. And then the alignment in terms of accreditation of programs. Our council chairperson accredits programs at universities. Now, we found that some universities were not accredited, and people who qualify from those universities have got a challenge registering professionally. And so we are trying to close that gap. The next one deals with public protection, chairperson. I will go quickly. Here, there are about five projects. One deals with the monitoring and evaluation so that we understand the issues. For example, what causes the collapses of buildings and so on, and deal with that. We work closely here, chairperson, with the Department of Labor. The other area is the area of compliance. Ourselves as the organization in terms of PFMA and treasury regulations, but also in terms of the general governance of the profession. The other one deals with international agreements, as I mentioned earlier. The fourth one is important. It deals with the issue of case management, where, for example, the members of the public report cases to the professional council. Some of the cases in the past, Chairperson, have taken as long as 1.5 years to deal with, which is really unacceptable. And after that, if the member of the public is not satisfied, only appeal to the CBE. So we are trying to deal with that area, Chairperson, and the development of regulations in various areas. In terms of the next one, Chairperson, the issue of green building, which I mentioned earlier, the issue focus on the health and safety, the issue of research so that we are able to advise government, the issue of the report, the annual report on the state of the built environment professions, and creating a knowledge hub for the professions. The next one talks to the issue of creating partnerships so that we can deliver on all these challenges. One area is the area of getting the organization known by the public, by the professionals. The other one deals with creating stakeholder contacts so that we can deliver on these mandates, Chairperson. And then, Chairperson, it's going to be now the budget, and I would request your permission, Chair, to get our Chief Financial Officer to present on this. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Chairperson, honorable members of the committee, mine is just to present the budget for the Council for the Built Environment. And Chairperson, I'd like to highlight that the first year in terms of our budget summary is for the current year in which the CBE is under operation. And we have further presented the following 2 years, which is the 2010 and 11 financial year, as well as the 2011 and 12 financial year. Chairperson, if we can just quickly go through the budget. We've got a transfer that has been allocated at the Parliament, and Chairperson, you'll see that in the following 3 years, we've got 24 million and then 25.
Jim, is the first column supposed to be 20910? Yes. Okay, thank you.
I do get your question. Maybe if you can clarify, ask me that, so what does the first column represent? Is it 2010, 2011, or is that from 2009? That's what they're asking.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, it starts from 2009 and it will end in 2010 March, as of the end of March 2010. Thank you, Chairperson, for that. The other income, Chairperson, represents our interest and levies, and the levies is the levies that we kept from the professional councils, while the interest is as the strategic investments within the financial institutions, Chair. That totals up to 2.3 for this current financial year. For the next two financial years, Chairperson, is 2.4 million. And in 2012, Chair, we're expecting that it will be 2.6. That brings the total revenue for the Council for the Built Environment to 26.5 million in the current financial year. We're expecting 28 million in the following financial year, while for 2011-12, we're expecting 29.7 million, Chair. However, Chair, you will realize that our total expenditure is far more than our revenue, being at 32 million for the current financial year. For the following financial year, we have projected it to be at 34 million rand, Chairperson, and for the 2011-12 Chair, we are projecting it to be at 36 million. Chairperson, we will further analyze the difference between the total revenue and total expenditure in the slide that's to come. And then, Chairperson, we've further segmented our total expenditure in terms of general operating costs as well as program costs. Chairperson, would like to highlight that you will see that the split where the program costs actually take up more than 50% of the budget allocation, while the operation costs take up a lesser percentage there, Chairperson. If we can just go through the operational costs, Chair, we've then segmented that into two in terms of just general goods and services that would be needed to run the organization, and that come up to 7.6 million, Chairperson, while the compensation of employees that are there to support the program unit, Chair, is at 5.4 million. If we look at the following 2 years, Chair, again, under goods and services, we've got 8 million, while in 2011 and 12, we've got 8.6 million rand. Chairperson, for goods and for compensation of employees, we're looking at 5.7 for the following financial year, and in the year 2011 and 12, we're looking at 6 million. Chairperson, if we can go into the program costs, their project expenditure, we have allocated 12.3 million for this current financial year. And then in the following years, Chair, it's 13.1 with a marginal increase there, Chairperson, of 13.8 in the 2011 and 12 year. Compensation for employees, Chair, again, we've got 6.6 million of our budget allocated to employees. We'll be specifically looking at addressing all those projects that have been mentioned by the CEO. And well, in the 2010 and 11 year, we're looking at 6.9, while in the 2011 and 12 year, we're looking at 7.4%, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'd further like to highlight that you will see that our increase as the budget allocation between the 3 years is at 6%, and that, Chairperson, is in line with the guidelines as issued by National Treasury, Chair. If we can move on to the next slide, Chair. Here, Chair, we have further subdivided the budget in terms of the project costs. And here we just wanted to highlight the key focus areas of the CDE and how the 12 million has been further allocated to these key areas. Chairperson, you would recall that the CEO mentioned that we've got a skills pipeline. In terms of the current financial year, Chair, we have allocated 3 million to that skills pipeline. And in the following two financial years, Chair, we've allocated 3.2 for that skills pipeline and 3.4 in the 11-12 financial year. In terms of public protection, Chair, we've allocated 1.3 million and 1.4 and 5 respectively for the 11 and 12 year. Transformation of the institutional and structural arrangements, Chair, here we've allocated 3.8 million and then for the following two financial years, Chair, it's at 4 million and then 4.3 for the 11-12. Then the CEO also highlighted partnerships. Shares is allocated $4 million towards partnerships and 4.3 in the year 2010 and 11, and 4.6 in the following year, Chair. Chairperson, as I've noted earlier, that according to the budget, it does show that we've got an expected deficit. And Chairperson, you would recall that in line with PFMA as well as the Treasury regulations, we are not supposed to budget for a deficit. However, Chairperson, I'd like to note that the CBE does have surplus funds, and these surplus funds, Chair, will be used to address the budget challenges that we are facing. If we can just look at that in the current financial year, Chair, according to the income that we're expecting and the total expenditure, there's a difference of 5.6 million rands, and then for the next financial year, Chair, it's 5.9, while in the year 2010 and 12, it's 6.3. Chairperson, you see that we've got surplus funds currently of 6.6 million, and then for the next current financial, the next coming financial year, Chair, we were utilizing 6.1 million rands. Chairperson, in the 2011 and 12, you would see that there hasn't been any surplus funds there. And Chairperson, that's because we are looking at the MTF process, and then there we will be engaging with National Treasury as well as the Department of Public Works, Chair. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would also request the CFO then to deal with the issues that were raised by the Auditor General, with your permission. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, in the previous financial year, there were a number of issues that were raised by the AG, which resulted in the CBE getting an adverse opinion, and they have listed has been the VAT deregistration, Chair. Then there was an issue on membership fees, also irregular expenditures, trade and other payables, and then disclosure of third parties, and then accumulated surplus, Chair. Chair, just to give a summary on each of these ones, of these issues highlighted, in terms of the Revenue Law Amendment Act, the CBE, as well as all the other 3A public entities, had to deregister for VAT. And Chairperson, there was just an issue of whether we are supposed to deregister or not. But subsequently, we have deregistered, and our contingent liability to SARS has been settled, with the financial statements then corrected accordingly, Chair. In terms of the irregular expenditure, Chair, this resulted in when the CBE was still relatively small, and Chairperson, due to the transactions that were happening, we then exceeded the threshold that was given by National Treasury, and this is with regards to two services, which is the internal audit as well as the travel agent. To date, Chairperson, we have issued a tender for the above two mentioned services, and both have been appointed accordingly, Chair. Chairperson, in terms of trade and other payables, those are out to balances from prior years, Chairperson, that were not adjusted accordingly. Investigations have gone into those balances that were outstanding, and Chairperson, they have been adjusted accordingly to date. And then Chairperson, the other issue here was in terms of disclosure of related parties. And in the prior financial year, Chairperson, in our financial statements, SARS was not listed as a third party to the CBE. But we have subsequently amended that, and our financial statements do show SARS as a third-party chair. And then again, there was an issue of accumulated surpluses. This is in non-compliance in terms of Section 53.3. And Chairperson, we have requested approval from National Treasury and that approval has been granted, Chair. Chairperson, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to present, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. In closing, members of the Honourable Committee, just the three areas that we want to highlight as still challenges that we're facing as the professions. One is the issue of integration of planning, and this is really created by the fact that we have seven different legislations, seven different governance structures, but we are trying to work towards dealing with this. And as I said earlier, that was in fact the reason there was the Built Environment Professions Bill last year. The other area, Chairperson, is the issue of inadequate funding of the professional councils. The importance of what I said earlier, Chair, in terms of three councils having existed before 2000 and three only being established from 2000 is that those that were there before 2000 are in a better position, Chairperson. But the ones that were created in 2000 are really badly. But they have the same mandate to carry out. In fact, the legislations, the six legislations are similar in all respects, clause by clause. And so there is that challenge, Chairperson. There's one council that still does not have an office. They don't have an employee, and they are expected to carry out a legal mandate. Sadly, I think the last point really stresses the issue of funding, Chairperson. The next slide is just the future outlook for the organization. We are focusing strongly on the issue of skills. Secondly, in terms of trying to integrate even without the benefit of the legislation, as I mentioned earlier, but to work together as the councils. As I said, at the beginning of this year, for the first time, we planned together. The third issue is really to create an information hub so that we can advise government, we can advise the industry, we can advise the professions. In conclusion, Chairperson, the organization has been challenged by the exponential growth in the past 2 years. In fact, if one looks at it in terms of the revenue, it tripled from 1 year to the next, and so that has brought some challenges, Chair, that we are dealing with. The issue of integration remains a challenge, and also the funding of the smaller councils, Chairperson. I thank you very much. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Babu Zulu, and some of the colleagues who have accompanied you. Now it's time for questioning. Before I give opportunity to the members, I'll start by asking one or two so that I can open the field for them. Obviously, you have mentioned that the council, which was established in 2000, and what is it which was established in 2000?
Thank you, Chair. I said we have six councils.
Yes.
The Council for Landscape Architects, the Council for Property Valuers, and the Council for Construction and Project Managers. Those were established for the first time by 2000 legislation. Also the CBE.
Okay, fine.
Thanks.
No, the process which we're going to take now is that we'll open members to ask questions, and then you jot down everything and then we'll respond later on. Let me open for the members to start to open. Okay. Let me start from this week and I'll come first. Honorable Member Feldman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like to get clarity on the partnership. Okay, as far as I know, there are some institutions already existing, like the National Housing Regulator Board and so on. How does the CBE work hand in hand with that as well? And also with the Housing Financial Finance System, NHFC, how do they fit in there as well? Thank you, Chair.
Temba.
Thank you, Chairperson. Before I can thank the presenter for the presentation, let me say an apology for the documents to be sent to the portfolio committee. I think here it says presentation to the Public Works Portfolio Committee / Select Committee. So it should have been also sent to the Select Committee. Maybe you had in mind that we're going to have the joint meeting. But if it's a joint meeting, that maybe you thought it's going to be a joint meeting, but definitely the Select Committee also exists. There's a secretary to the committee. You should have sent the copies also to the secretary, committee secretary of the Select Committee. And then coming to the question that the chairperson has asked, I also want to be clarified. The establishment of the council in year 2000. How long should this council be in office? If possible, can we get the breakdown with regard to gender and also the demographic spread? I know you have given on the other slide, but also on that slide, if maybe we can go back to that slide where it shows the skills in each province, maybe we, so that we are actually very clear that we do not have skilled people in our provinces. And let me say this, this presentation, actually, there are areas where it actually, to me, it's like you are still planning to implement. But if we can get exactly the implementation part of the whole process, to say, like, for instance, page 9, development indicators. If I myself, as a member of parliament in my constituency, I have this document and I present it to the community to say this is what Public Works is doing, I'm not actually going to be as clear as you have presented to us, that is what. For example, poverty and inequality, promote a more inclusive economy, creation of decent work, program to build economic and social infrastructure. You know, it's a program that is still going to be implemented. Not even part of this program has been implemented. So I had the question to say, are you succeeding? If where you have succeeded in the implementation, can we actually get the statistics? And Also, on page 11, you mentioned on the indicator safety and security. You still want to strengthen. You have realized the weakness. What measures are you putting in place? You know, different measures that you are putting in place now that you have realized that you've got a weakness in this area. The math and science also. Math and science, you know, if you can do a research in all the provinces, I think we've got the youth not only saying youth, young women and young men who have got math and science, have you as a department actually, or the profession, thought of making a research so that you are really informed of whether there are people in provinces that have got math and science, and what are you doing even in schools to encourage? Have you gone to schools and encourage the youth to actually take this math and science very seriously, to inform them about yourself that in future you are really going to meet people who will be part of you? The person, I'll stop there. Thank you. I'll come back if need be. Then.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Lee.
Chairman, thank you very much. Zulu, thank you for your presentation and your colleagues. On page 3, in terms of the 6 professional councils, I note that town planning is not one of those included, and I'm wondering why it is not included, because I would have thought it would fit very much into your mandate. And then on page 6, your item 2, you highlight very strongly sustainable built environment, but then a natural environment is kind of left on one side. And throughout your presentation, I don't see any real reference to the natural environment. Is that because it's not part of your mandate, and is then this item 2 on page 6 incorrect? And if it is part of your mandate, why are you not addressing it? Then the promotion, item 7, promotion of field training. I'm not sure how you propose to do that. And in fact, I agree with my colleague who's just spoken. A lot of what you're saying here is kind of very, very general. There's very little specific that we can get our teeth into. But nevertheless, yeah, I'm not sure how you're going to deal with that field training. The item 9, ensure uniform applications and norms and guidelines, is a very frightening thing for me in particular, because what it is that you set your norms and standards too low, and you then have an environment which doesn't excel. So you need to change your target there, and there must be minimum norms and standards, but there mustn't be uniform. Uniform means everyone has to apply the same. Even if you want to do better, you can't not allow to do better. And that, to me, doesn't augur well for our future. I'd like to move on, if I may, then I think my next comment regarding the finances, which, and I beg your pardon, item 14, page 14, I'm not sure why there's this big emphasis on provinces. The market will determine where people are going to get work. If there's no work in Gauteng, well, then I'll go to KZN if that's where the work is. I don't think you should be wasting your time and energy on that kind of analysis. The skill shortage is throughout the country, basically, and the market will push people to where they can get jobs. So I think you're kind of wasting your time and energy on this kind of exercise. If you need to, then look at demographics and gender and so on, rather than at provinces. all of us will get a take a job where we can get a job. And that, then on that same one, I don't know what PM and CPM is. I'm afraid many of these presentations I have a problem with these what are they called? And the acronyms, yeah. They're used extensively, and I have to listen carefully during the discussion to see what SHE is, but you did explain that was safety, health, and environment. Okay, the maths and science has been touched on. I think that's critical. I think that the emphasis should be really on school level and getting children equipped to take on the profession. But my question then is, why is it your mandate and not the Department of Education? Surely that's their mandate, and what, how do you tie in with the department? If I can move on to page 20, there's a frightening little line here that has no explanation. Levies. On whom? Is this yet another tax that we're imposing on our professional people? What are these levies? I think we need some explanation there. Then the compensation of employees is, you know, you look at proportions and it seems to be okay, but how many employees are there in this 5.4 million and the 6.6 million? Actually, how many people are employed who cost that much of money? If it's 200 people, well, it's not theirs, but maybe they don't need 200. But if it's three people, well, perhaps some people are overpaid. And I'm surprised that we don't get the actual for 2008 and 2009 as a benchmark to start the comparison on. You're starting with a budget figure and only giving us budget figures. And as you know, I find it much easier to look at history and see whether the budget is tying up, and if not, why not? And you can then explain that. And again, the kind of project skill pipeline, 3 million, public protection, 1.3. I don't know what that is. What are those projects? What exactly are they? I presume it's more than one project. It's just the title. It doesn't tell us what exactly you're doing there. Then on page 22, I think that if we had been given at least 1 year's actual, I might be able to understand this, but right now I simply do not understand the surplus fund line. If you look at the 2009-10 budget, you're saying the deficit is going to be 5.6 million, but you've got 6.1 million in surplus, or 6.7 million, sorry, which leaves you with a 1.1 million surplus at the end of the year. How then, in 2010-11, do you suddenly go from a 1.1 million surplus to 6.2 million surplus? Where did the additional 5.1 million surplus come from? I'm totally lost on these surplus lines. In terms of the VAT liability, if you were meant to deregister on the 1st of March 2005, did that reconciliation, did you reconcile from 2005? And at the end of the day, given your operation, I would have thought that you'd been, as a rule, getting VAT refunds. So that must have created quite a huge liability. What was the liability? You talk about it being a consistent liability settled. How much was it? And again, you see, if we had our actuals for last year, is it in the current budget year or was it last year? Membership fees on page 26. I mean, is this what we're talking about, levies? Who pays you membership fees? The professional councils themselves levy membership subscriptions on their members, and I assume those subscriptions are used to run the councils. They're not passed on to you. So I think that's related to my earlier question about levies and being yet another tax. The irregular expenditure is of concern, but I think we'll leave that one for now. You talk about related parties, and then you talk about third parties. Now, the two are completely different. A third party is not a related party. So I got a bit lost when you were talking about that page 29. A third party is someone who's at arm's length from you. There's no relationship at all. Related parties are as they say, related. And so I need a little bit more explanation about what exactly this was all about. I don't actually see how SARS can be a related party, but if that's what you're saying it is, please give me an explanation. The surpluses we've talked about. Thank you, Madam Chair. I see it's now Madam rather than Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Yes, I can start with we've had six councils, and if we look on slide number six, the mandate we've had here, the first one, to promote and protect the interests of the public, and then also the third one and the fifth one. I bring it to your attention because I'm coming from a mining area, and I want to know what is your involvement, especially in this mining area, because if you look at point 5 there, the standard of health, safety and environmental protection is not there. And then I want to know from you, what is your involvement in the mining industry? Because I think in many places in South Africa, the mining industry is busy damaging everything in our environment. And you have really a big role to play in this whole situation. So I want to know, what is your interest there, and what is the success rate you have in these, when you're dealing with mines, especially in the environmental situation. Point 7 also on page 6, or slide 6, the training field. What success you have there? If we look into the industry and we look to our professional career in South Africa, there's a big shortage. And what are you doing? How do you get people to get involved in certain careers where we've got a shortage in? And do you have success? And if we have success at the end of the day, how many of these people are leaving our country, and why are they leaving the country? That is questions I think each and every one of us want to ask, because we want answers, and you are involved in this situation. Yes, okay, then on slide 14 as well, my colleagues also touch on that, and I also want to touch on that, and that is true. You will have people in certain provinces where we have the activity. If the activity is there, the people will be there, that we will get engineers there, and we will get everyone there. But if there's no activity, there will be no engineers. So it is a bit of, not say useless, but maybe for your purposes you want to have this information. But I think if we look into the whole situation, if you look to this diagram in its whole, it's looking very bad. There's a big shortage in our professional jobs. And this is the picture we've got out of this diagram. And we must do something about that. We must create something to get our people staying in our country. And I think it is in front of your door to do something like that, to do something about it. Okay, then on the budget summary, I also want to ask something and say something about that on page 20, slide 20. I want to know, there is a shortage of 6 million. From where are you going to get this shortage in the 2009-2010 budget year? I want to know, because if you've got a shortage, you must create money from somewhere, and I want to know from where are you going to get it. And then on the very next slide, 22, you've got a surplus. And from where do you get the surplus now? In the one hand, you've got a shortage, and on the other hand, then you've got a surplus. If you can explain it to us, I appreciate it. And then on the last slide, 33, In conclusion, bullet point two, the lack of integration remains a challenge. I want to know why. Why is it a challenge? What are you doing as department to resolve this problem? Are we going to continuing up to when to resolve this problem as well? Why are there always a lack of integration and why are the is it a challenge for the department? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chief. Mama, Chief. Yeah, thank you. My first question is based on professional counsel. Who's sponsoring these professional counsels? Because I believe if their levies that have been paid to these councils, will they not be self-sustainable rather than being sponsored by the department? The other issue, I would like to get the clarification on what is the meaning of adverse opinion. The other issue, it deals with surplus and deficit. Why do you only budget for deficit? Because you need to cut down so that you have a balanced budget. And on this surplus, why do you bring it in the end? Why don't you say surplus brought forward so that when you budget, you start with the surplus. You don't end up with the surplus in which you put it in the end. And as you are saying, there's a shortage of skills, and you have budgeted a certain amount of money for bursaries. But I find that it's been minimal. It's 3 million for bursaries. I think it's low. And also, how do you inform the public that you have bursaries for this certain category of skills? Because maybe also, as members of parliament, we need to have that information, because where we come from, we still have children who have science, who want to do these professions and they don't have money. And on the issue of employee compensations, I realize three categories here. Under operation cost, you have compensation of employees. Under program cost, there's also compensation of employees. And the project cost, you have compensation of employees. Are these permanent employees or they are temporary employees? And also would like to get the number of people who are being permanently employed by the department. The last one, on the issue of that is aligning your this program according to SONA, but I don't see the issue of job creation. How do you envisage to employ people in line with what the president said that by end of the year we should be having over 200 employees? Thanks.
Okay, thank you, members. Members, before I start to ask questions, what I wanted to suggest is that let us have this round so that we can give in our program the agreement board also an opportunity to do something. But let me start ask question. Mine, the advantage or the disadvantage to be the last person is that I won't take long. I'll ask two or three questions. Now, one question.
Sorry, Chair Person, with due respect, can I just align and make a follow up on the question asked by the Honourable Jacob on the employees, number of employees.
Okay, you see what I'm scared of. But what I'm scared of, once we start, everybody will start to add. I will agree with the condition that we allow Mama to be the last person before I ask questions. Yeah, because we wanted to give the argument board also an opportunity to give the presentation. Okay, Mama, come on. This must be short, ne?
It's very short, Chairperson. You know with me, it's between life and death if I don't ask this one. Number of employees, can we have the breakdown of how many females, how many males. Thanks.
Thank you. Bob Market, in our presentation also, I'd like to echo my sentiments, like the members, that it was good and straight. But nevertheless, we must have clarification so that you can be empowered when we go out to be able to respond to some of the things. I'll put an example on page 6 when you spoke about the CDC mandate. You spoke about the first one, the promote and protect the interest of public in the built environment. I'll put an example. A few days ago, there was a bridge which has collapsed in Mpumalanga. What is the role in that regard? Because we are so lucky, nobody died there. But the challenge is that nationally and internationally, we are facing a challenge to meet the demands of 2010. What is the role in that regard? And also, is there any possibility to rectify that mistake before 2010, if possible? And then again, you spoke about the ability of the professionals to deal with the mandate. Maybe if you can elaborate more, that we have that ability at the present time. You know why I'm raising that? I'm raising that in regard with the things which were identified by the Auditor General. And then also in addition, in the Auditor General's advice opinion, spoke about the CDD, which does not have proper internal control systems which are in place to ensure completeness and accuracy of membership fees income. Maybe if you can clarify that at this present juncture, do we have anything? Are you systems speaking to each other? And then also, some else, you raised about the issue of registrations, where the people are so reluctant to register. What measurements are you taking on board to make sure that people are registering? Because if the people are undermining, that's very difficult to collect those particular funds, those levies. And it is alleged that people are playing hide and seek about the issue of registration. If they're supposed to register, they'll come and tell us that this company is from Swaziland or from Lesotho or Namibia or whatever. When they're supposed to pay the levies, when suits them, no. This company belongs to. What measures are you having in order to control those problems or those challenges? And then also, the issue of racial distribution. What measures do you have in your capacity maybe also to deal about those ones? And also, somewhere in page 19, you spoke about the increase of the brand of the CDD people, that people it must be everywhere. You see, I'm from the rural area. The legal experience which I've got is that most of the time, some entities and the department as well, they concentrate in big cities, like if you go to the metro. They don't go, you see, there is a quite difference between a theory and practical, where people, theoretically, they say, no, rural masses will represent them. When it comes to practical thing, which I think was raised by Mr. Rune van der Leyen, there are no offices. The office is based there, and it doesn't, maybe take its meaning direct to the people. So what measures do you have in order to make sure that you focus well for that theme of rural development, so that you can make sure that your brand is taken down to the people? And then also, another thing, in page 14, about that graph which you highlighted there, I'm a little bit concerned, because you spoke about the provincial skills and demand distribution. And you said, underline provincial skills. But there are provinces which are not, or maybe an old man on the street, if we can come up to this, if you check. There's nothing said about the Mpumalanga province and Northern Cape and Free State as well. While you're supposed to empower us, because we are from different provinces, so that we can be able, when we are being challenged about the issue of such things, we'll be able to account. And then again, I've got a lot of questions, but I'll pose with this one. Please, if there are people from me that they mustn't interpret me negatively, but that's true. There is this ongoing thing of that change. People of Zimbabweans are suffering, and which their professional people are lying on the street. But a few days ago, there was something which was exposed, whereby we was interviewing some of these people. Are you from Zimbabwe? No, I'm from Durban. Are you from Zimbabwe? No, I'm from Joburg. The only thing I'm studying, I'm sleeping here. And all the similar people, they were raising very negative picture about South Africa. But here comes the challenge. In terms of influence in South Africa, what steps or what measures do you have in order to make proper auditing about professionals which are also are being accounted to be among those particular people, which can be utilized in order to address our problems in the country? I'd like to stand there. Thank you very much.
Over to you,
Makeba.
Thank you, Chairperson. I appreciate the question. But as we can see, it's a mouthful, Chairperson. I will try and run through them as quick as I can. Honourable Member Feldman asked about the issue of partnerships and how we were working with an HBRC and the Housing Finance Corporation. Chairperson, we have begun to work with NHBRC, but really it's on the issue of skills, because the built environment skills are used by the housing sector. But that is really the limit to which we interact with them. There are other sister organizations that deal with other issues relating to housing. So we do not interact with the Housing Finance Corporation, for example. But we, as I said earlier, Chairperson, we interact with the infrastructure departments and entities as it relates to the professions that we are regulating. Secondly, I think the issue of the sending of documents to this honourable committee, I again need to reiterate our sincere apology on that, and we ensure that in future it does not happen. There was a question also, Chairperson, about how long do the councils stay in office. We said the councils themselves were established in 2000 by 2000 suite of legislation, but the councillors are appointed for a period of 4 years at a time. In fact, this year, we perhaps would have seen in the media all the councils had advertised. They have just been appointed now for a period of 4 years, the CBE then is going to follow at the beginning of next year, because it's formed by these councils. So they are in office for 4 years. In terms of the gender spread, Chairperson, there is a challenge. I would say firstly, in terms of the representation of particularly women in the governance structures of the councils, but also in terms of representation of black people in general. That is still a challenge, but I think it's a challenge that the minister is aware of, and as he appoints, he's going to take care of that. But there's also a bigger challenge, Shepherdson, in terms of representation in the professions themselves. And this, of course, is a bigger challenge in a sense that it takes a long time to fix that, because we've got to have people coming through the education system into the professions. But I think we need stronger focus on this, Shepherdson. And it's not really, in a sense, the council and ourselves. It's the whole system, from the education system with maths and science to the university in terms of what they produce, and then into the professions. Some of the programs that we are dealing with, Chair, are trying to do that. We have a schools program where we begin to attract the students into the professions. We deal with maths and science issues there. The Honourable Member asked why we're dealing with that and not the Department of Education. Our interventions are in addition to what the Department of Education is doing, but also with the self-interest of attracting these young people towards the built environment profession. The Honourable Member also asked about the how we are implementing this. If we look at some of the presentations we do deal with the different projects that try to implement these strategic objectives. Maybe we were just not clear from, I'm trying to check here, from page 16. We take the strategic objective at the top, and then we talk about the projects that try to answer to that strategic objective. In terms of aligning with the State of the Nation address and the development indicators on page 9, I think the Honourable Members will realize that our limitation is, in fact, dealing with the professions. And so as we try to align ourselves to the national indicators and the SONA, we deal with that in the context of us dealing with the professions. If we look at the last column, Chair, it says CBE responses to these two issues, and we say then how do we contribute. So we might not, for example, in terms of employment creation, we might not be able to employ 200 people, but we are saying in terms of our role, our contribution to employment is going to be through the policies that we put in the professions, the regulatory system that we put in the professions. In terms of safety and security as well, Chair, on page 11, that was another question. We are saying here the way we can contribute to this is that we have a properly regulated, we have properly regulated professions. If we compare again with other professions, with the health professions, for example, they are properly regulated. We unfortunately do not have adequate regulatory framework currently, but we are developing that together with our professional council. In terms of math and science and focus on the provinces, the question was, what are we doing at schools in terms of getting our young people to be attracted to these professions? In terms of us managing development pipeline, Chairperson, we have a schools program, for example, where we begin to deal with the issues with the students, but we also then have the buffer fund that those that have passed in math and science that are willing to come to the bigger environment professions, we try to assist there. Of course, one honorable member noted correctly that the money that we've budgeted for this is not enough. It is clearly nowhere near enough. That is why in terms of the skills or audits that I mentioned where the slide on the board came from, that we've actually made a separate proposal to the minister because it's a bigger intervention that we cannot really deal with in terms of our current budget. Honorable Lees asked the question about why town planners are not part of this. It's a question, honorable member, that has come from various parts, even when we interact with the professions themselves. And it's an area that we are discussing with the minister. We also realize that this profession is governed or is regulated elsewhere under a different ministry. So our understanding is that if they have to be brought to be part of the built environment, there would have to be interministerial discussions on that. There are other professions, Chairperson, like the land surveyors who also play an important role in the built environment and the geo technical profession. It's the same issue. They are currently regulated elsewhere. In terms of the natural environment, I think Honorable Liz identified correctly that we did not have a strong emphasis in our slide on the natural environment. But in fact, in terms of our programs, if we look at the green building project, for example, it focuses squarely on the sustainability of our environment. And we are working with this together with other organizations, such as the Green Building Council of South Africa. And in terms of developing norms as well, we regulate professions, and our contribution is really firstly in terms of getting our professionals to be sensitive to the issues of sustainability when they design and they implement projects. There was a question about why we're focusing on provinces on that slide, Chairperson. I think the importance of this is that whilst we can have a general view about the shortage of skills in the country and the various professions, the provinces are very important in a sense that if you look at these professions that we're talking about, they are required by the municipalities. And so if those skills are not there, it's difficult really to attract them from somewhere else. It is important to highlight this. I think one of the projects that were run by the Development Bank of South Africa was actually trying to focus on this, on capacitating the municipalities, particularly with the skills. And we are now working with them on the program that is called the Young Professionals Program. So the issue of highlighting the provinces is very important, Chair, in that regard. In terms of what PM and CM means, CPM means, Chair, we apologize, but it stands for Project Managers and Construction Project Managers. It's one of the six councils that that we have that regulate that field. In terms of levies, Chair, the levies, the regulation that was developed, I think the thinking, Chairperson, was that the CBE will be funded by levies. And the levies come from professional councils. Now, how the professional councils calculate levies in terms of that regulation is that they calculate it in line with the people that they have registered, and then they will pay that levy over to the CBE. It's a very small percentage of what the councils receive. For example, there would be a levy of 20 rand on each of the professionals that they have registered. There should not be an additional tax on the individual. It's actually the professional council that pays the levy and not the professional. Of course, when they calculate the subscription fee or the fee for a registered person, they will take that into account. There was a question about how many people are employed in the CBE. There are about 30 employees currently, and the breakdown in terms of gender. Out of 30, we actually have 15. It's about 18 females. In terms of gender distribution, let me just check. About 23 black, and. The rest then, about 23 Africans, one colored male, one Indian female, one white male, two white females. That's the distribution, Chairman. We can also send this committee the distribution in terms of the professions. In one of the reports that we have produced, we deal with that distribution, but in fact it's not part of this presentation today. But that is where we also deal with the issues of what we need to do to try and correct those imbalances in the professions. I take the point that the Honourable Member raised about having the 08 and 09 column. It would have been useful in terms of comparisons, and we will take that point in future. In terms of the projects, there, Chairperson, we just did the strategic objectives, but if we go to those other pages, we then find the actual projects from page 16, to page 19. And at the top, as I said, we'll see that we deal with the strategic objectives, and then we go into the project. So the money that is allocated, in fact, is allocated to those projects that are listed from page 16 to 19. In terms of the surplus, the surplus, Chairperson, as we the CFO explained, it was the money that had come from the previous years, firstly as levies and also as interest. When we receive the grant at the beginning of the year, we put in the bank and we draw as we spend. And we get interest for the year for the money that is in the bank. So we get the bit of interest from that, Chairperson. In terms of the liability for SARS for the VAT deregistration issue. I think the liability was 2.1 million rand, and in fact it was dealt with in the last year's financials. It has been sorted out now with SARS. And we also forfeit the VAT refunds because, in fact, we should not be charging VAT in the first place. So that's the VAT issue, Chair. I think I've explained the issue of levies. In terms of related parties and also the I can't remember what it was, the related parties and CFO, maybe you can explain the difference between the two.
Thank you, Chairperson. The issue that was raised by the Auditor General Chair was merely a disclosure issue. And Chairperson, according to an accounting statement, it states that all entities that are under government entities are to be seen by all the entities that are in government as a related party. Hence, that's why SARS had to be disclosed in our financial statements as a related party, Chair. Correctly stated, Chair, we don't have any relations with SARS except just the legislative one in terms of paying all the tax that is due from our employees. But in terms of an accounting standard check, we were supposed to just disclose them because they are an entity of government in our financial statements check as a related party. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Just to continue with the questions, again, in terms of the slide that we have up there, in terms of the question why we waste time on the provincial distribution. In fact, this slide actually, Chairperson, indicates the need that was of the provinces. It's actually the industry saying this is the need that we have, and we cannot find people in this province. And so that is also the way we should look at it, Chairperson. Honorable Groenewald asked about our involvement in the mining industry. I would say, Chair, we are not involved. In fact, the mining sector is regulated differently. And I'm sure the entity that deals with the mining sector is aware of the challenges that the honourable member mentioned in terms of environment and also safety and health issues there. There was a question also from Honourable Groenewald about the success we've had in the field of training. I would say we have not really had great success here. I think it's a bigger challenge, Chair. As I indicated, it's the issue that starts with the schooling system and so on. But we have put interventions that try to attract the young people to our professions. We are very selfish about that, although we look at the country in terms of the needs of the country, but we would like to attract people to our professions. In terms of our loss in the professions, part of it being the people leaving the country, we did a study, I think, 2 years ago, and we find that although we had certain losses. In fact, after that, it got better. In fact, with the economic crisis, in fact, it got even better because where people had gone to Dubai, for example, and so on, with the infrastructure that was there, some of them are beginning to come back to South Africa, also attracted by what government has put in place in terms of the infrastructure rollout for the next 5 years. As we said earlier, we are doing something about the skills shortage. Why the integration remains a challenge, Chair, it's partly a structural issue in terms of legislation, in terms of the regulation of the professions. When you are dealing with seven different cantons, and they are dealing with the collective built environment professions, as I said, we have begun to plan together with the professional councils, and that should improve the integration issue. But there are issues that will have to be dealt with through the legislation, Chair. Honorable Jacobs asked about who is sponsoring the professional councils. Nobody is sponsoring them, Chair. They get their funds from the charges they levy on the registered persons. Now, the challenge with that is that, firstly, registration is not compulsory, so we could be sitting at perhaps 30-33% of people that would have registered, which also reduces the money that comes to the councils. But secondly, that sometimes it's just the numbers of the professionals that are there. If you look at the landscape architects, they only have about 120 registered persons, and that can't bring enough money to run an organization. If you think about how much each individual pays. In terms of the what adverse opinion means, my understanding, Chair, is that it means that the Auditor General could not make an opinion, express an opinion on the financial statements due to the materiality of the amount that was involved there, which, as I said, later was then the 2.1 million rand, the SARS issue. So it was actually a very severe opinion from the Auditor General. There was also a question as to why we show the surplus lower down and not show it as an opening balance. I think it was just the way of presentation, Chairperson. Otherwise, it is part of the money that goes into paying for the expenses for the year. In terms of going forward, we did say that we're engaging with Treasury because we understand we are not allowed to budget for deficits. But in 2011, 2012, we either get from that money from Parliament, or we must cut in terms of things that we will be able to do. We advertise the bursaries, Chair, in the national newspaper. I think we could, in fact, improve the communication to the provinces, particularly assist the members of this honourable committee.
I want to request you maybe to try and sum up until quarter past, because it's not already behind time.
Okay.
So that we can do
Okay, Chairperson, I will try and rush through. In terms terms of the compensation of employees, we just separated those because we just wanted to show how much money goes directly to achieving our objective and how much money goes to the support services. So the breaking down of employee compensation was just to show so many people are in the support and so many are in the delivery of the core functions of the organization. In terms of job creation, Chairperson, again, we cannot on ourselves contribute much to the creation of employment with an organization that has got 30 people. But we can contribute in terms of the other work that we do, in terms of facilitating the employment of people that are not employed. In fact, they are graduates that are not that have graduated but are not in the system because they haven't had the practical experience to participate in the economy, and that is where we are playing a role, Chairperson. In terms of how we relate with the collapses, if, for example, there's a bridge collapse or a collapse of a building, our council, which is the Engineering Council of South Africa, does an investigation, and if the professional is found to have had a part in that, they then institute disciplinary action against that professional. In terms of the professional council's ability to deal with their mandate, it was really related to the issue of funding. That if they don't have the funding, they are not able to deal with their mandate. We explained the issue of the membership fees, Chairperson, was that the systems for controlling that, because you cannot in fact invoice for membership fees. You wait until the council says these are the people that are registered and here is the levy. So there is no way of knowing before that. And that is the issue that we are dealing with the council in terms of creating a control system that is sound in terms of that. Otherwise, we also really don't know until we get it from the council. Why registration is not compulsory? I think when the acts were implemented in 2000, there is a provision in the act, I think it's section 20, that deals with the identification of work. In other countries, it's called reservation of work. The councils needed to identify work that is going to be done by engineers and also demarcate that work to only be done by registered persons. Now, that process had not happened at the time. And with the professional councils have now developed the policies, I think, Chair, next year, by mid-next year, we should have implemented that, and that will usher in compulsory registration, because the Act does say that once that has been done, a person who is not registered cannot practice the profession. I answered to the issue of racial distribution. In the professions, it's quite severe, particularly when you deal with the issue of gender representation. But it's a big challenge that we've got to deal with, and it's going to take time to, with our history, it's going to take time to balance that. In terms of what we are doing to try and get the CBE known, we have put some money really in terms of the budget to try and get out so that people understand that there is a CBE. You can appeal to the CBE if you have been badly done by the professional. But in fact, it also starts with the professional counsel. That is where the first reports go and the counsels deal with, and if the member of the public is still unsatisfied, they then appeal to the CBE. Honorable Chair, you mentioned that we did not mention anything about the other provinces like Free State, Mpumalanga, and Northern Cape. In that slide, Chair, on page 14, in fact, it's those provinces are shown there, and we can see in the Free State that we in terms of quantity surveyors is a huge need, but in terms of the others is a mild challenge. Mpumalanga is in a better situation in terms of some professions, but in terms of architects, mining-related engineers, projects and construction managers, and even more so in terms of property valuers. And these things also impact on other systems, Chair. If you talk about property valuers and you talk about what the country is trying to do in terms of valuation of properties and so on, that creates a bottleneck. In terms of the distribution of the professions, we've got about 17% female in the professions and less than 30% being black in the professions. And so those are the issues, Chair, that we are trying to deal with. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable members, as well as the department, I think at this moment I'd like to thank you very much. Maybe to try and trouble yourself to come and represent and give this representation. I think it's healthy to us. Unlike those who think that if there is no minister, they are unable to come there. They will come only if there is a minister. But nevertheless, thank you very much. But don't forget what I've requested earlier on. We need that response from the DG about what they meant. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Members, I think it's now the time so that you can release them.
Thank you, Chair, and we appreciate the opportunity that the Honorable Committee gave us to present. Thank you.
Honorable members, I think we're left with one now. The presentation by the argument board, as well as people from the department. I think it's now time where we can start. But with the condition which I wanted to request something once more from you, that if possible, I realize that maybe it's nearly time up. A lot of people, they feel that at 1 o'clock they ought to go out. But this time, I'll request you so that it can empower ourselves, because most of these deliberations, they assist us as the deployees, so that when we go back to the various constituencies, we are in the position maybe to be empowered when dealing with the matters. But I won't say how long, but I'll request you, because I think we don't have a plenary this afternoon. Therefore, so that you can give an argument board an ample time maybe to give us 1, 2, 3. But it will depend on us. If you allow me these rounds when we are about to start with the period of questioning, not to prolong a lot of questions. But if you don't mind, I don't have any problem, we can knock off at 5 o'clock. That's not a problem. Mama.
Mr. President, we don't mind, provided you give us lunch.
Yeah. A good one. Okay, let's start. As usually, I'll request maybe our visitor maybe to introduce himself. Unfortunately for ourselves, we have already started with the process because we received your apology that you were stuck in the traffic. We won't introduce ourselves anymore, but only yourself, so that you can start and kick start.
Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Joe Odhiambo. I'm the CEO of Agrima South Africa. I thank you for giving me the opportunity. It's a great honor for me to be here. I'm here on behalf of Agrima. I bring greetings from the Chairperson, Mr. Pepe Selinga, who unfortunately could not make it, not due to the fact that he does not recognize us. The subcommittee, but he did meet the subcommittee on two previous occasions. Unfortunately, today he could not be with us today.
Well, that's been set with another subcommittee.
The select committee.
Okay, no,
parliamentary select committee. My presentation is on the strategic plan and budget for 2009-10. Agrima South Africa to the Parliamentary Select Committee for the Department of Public Works. Honorable Chairperson, I will try and, due to time constraints, deal with the issues as expeditiously as I can without diluting the content. The presentation has been distributed, and the members are free to follow the presentation as handed out. The mandate of Agrima South Africa is directly under delegation of authority from the Minister of Public Works to provide assurance by carrying out testing, evaluation, and confirmation of fitness for purpose of non-standardized construction products and systems. In other words, we look at new construction products which do not have standards. The next slide does show this, illustrate the area in which Agrima operates. When a product is being developed, it is normally starts by research. After research is when the product, when one wants to introduce it to the market, then it comes to an organization like Agrima to provide independent testing to ensure that the product can be used. So we test the product to see whether they can be used as standardized products, and after we then give them a certificate, then one can go and use it in compliance with the National Building Regulation. Now, the certificate that we do award allows one to use a product on projects which one can then go on and use it as a standardized product. Research is done by research institutions, for example, the CSR, where we actually do sit in. And maybe I should just explain why we are there. When Agrima was established in 1969, the mandate of managing the agency was assigned to the CSIR, and since then, Agrima South Africa has been housed at the CSIR, which is in Pretoria. We do have an office in Port Elizabeth, which handles the area right up to Cape Town and the coastal region. In terms of the area we operate, Agrima is a member of the World Federation of Technical Assessment Organizations, which is a world body of similar institutions which carries out testing of non-standardized products. Now, once the product has been certified as being fit for purpose, in other words, one can use it, it does what the developer says it does, then once there are three or four suppliers of similar products, then industry comes together and develops standards, and therefore the product is used as a standardized product. That slide illustrates the region of Agrima, with innovative testing agencies and the standardized agencies which operate in various different categories of product development. To date, Agrima has certificated 482 certificates. A certificate is an assurance, giving somebody an assurance that the product can be used correctly. And of these 482, 169 are still valid, are currently valid. Why is it that only some of them are valid? The reason being that some of them
they, once they've gone and be used their standardized product, then there's no need to be to hold a certificate because the standards then take over. For example, products which have come through the agreement, such as the router, things like the hollow concrete block, metal roofing tiles, lightweight internal partitioning, etc., etc. Now, in terms of granting this certification, what is the kind of work we do? What are the typical scope of evaluation? We look at issues like structural strength, fire, performance in fire, water penetration, thermal energy and energy performance, condensation, acoustic performance, etc. Now, given that we're an agency of government, we must align our strategies with the government's strategy. And to illustrate this, I took the 10 priorities of the current government's MTSF, which was highlighted by the President on the 3rd of June this year in his State of the Nation address. And I've aligned the 10 key points to what we as AGRIMA does to realize this particular objective. The first one was to speed up economic growth and transform the economy to create decent work and sustainable livelihood. Obviously, our work, which is testing fitness for purposes, reduces the risk and satisfies health and ensures that the products that we certify meet health and safety requirements. And once the product is certified by AGRIMA, it has deemed to certify status in the National Building Regulations. In other words, it complies with the law. And they're written into several statutes of government, as illustrated on that particular slide. And related to government's massive program to build economic and social infrastructure, we reduce the risks associated with these alternatives, and we cover both building and civil infrastructure, and thereby support the introduction of innovative construction technologies. The third point is very important, which is to develop and implement a comprehensive rural development strategy. A lot of our products are available and can be used in rural areas. For example, agricultural building materials and products. We've got several different alternative water tanks. We've got road stabilizing agencies, which can be used for far outlying areas or low volume roads. Products which can reduce dust penalties, which are beneficial for use in maintaining low-volume rural roads. In terms of strengthening the skill and human base, though we are not directly involved in this, but we assist the smaller municipalities to make informed decisions on the use of non-standardized products. In other words, we provide them with the technical support. We also ensure that applicants are audited to ensure the certificate applicants are audited to ensure that they have adequately trained personnel, thereby enhancing skills development and human resource base within the country. In terms of improving the health profile of all South Africans, our assessment criteria ensure that products that are granted meet the health and safety requirements of the nation, as illustrated there, issues related to structural performance, fire, thermal performance, etc., etc. In terms of fight against the sixth point in the President's State of the Nation address was to intensify the fight against crime and corruption. A lot of our products can be used to fight crime and corruption. For example, we have innovative products for security doors, windows, fencing. All these contribute towards this particular fight against crime and corruption. The seventh point in the President's State of the Nation address was to build a cohesive, caring, sustainable community. Now, this we do by providing proper housing and improved infrastructure that will go a long way to providing a caring and sustainable community. And we believe there's a place for non-standard and innovative solutions in addressing this particular need. And that is why AGRIMA is there. And point number eight was working with the rest of Africa, with Africa and the rest of the world in pursuing African advancement and enhanced international cooperation. I mentioned earlier that we are a member of the World Federation of Technical Assessment Organizations, and we are well based to provide South African products with the qualification of the testing
to enable them to be used overseas. In other words, a lot of our South African products are used overseas on the strength of the Agrima certificate, and thereby promoting the South African-made products being used elsewhere within the continent and the rest of the world. And the ninth point on the there are two other points which are missing from this particular slide, but are listed in the detail of the slide that you have, which is the ninth point in the President's State of the Nation address was to ensure sustainable resource management and use. Now, Agrima South Africa is currently assessing and investigating ways of assessing sustainable and green issues as part of the evaluation process. Sustainable management is a big word in the world. Is a big word in the world at the moment, and we are playing our part. And hopefully, once the legislation regarding sustainability of energy consumption is issued, Agrima will be the organization to do the testing for sustainability, hopefully. And the tenth point in the President's State of the Nation address was to build a developmental state and improve public services and strengthen democratic institutions. Currently, we are playing a role in this particular initiative, and we believe that once Agrima is created as a legal entity, the legislation is currently under hand by the department, we'll be able to do more in this particular initiative to support the president, the government's 10 points in the State of the Nation address. Now, other benefits of Agrima certification. These innovative products lead to local economic stimulus, because if somebody develops a product in a local area, it can lead to improvements of that particular area. It also leads to improvement of existing products. And we have unique testing equipment which we use, and we develop new criteria or new ways of developing or testing new products. We also, as I mentioned previously, promote the export of South African manufactured products, and we reassure the fitness of purpose of new products. Our assessments are comprehensive assessments of performance. Now, I've just got a couple of examples of a few systems. It's not an endorsement of these particular systems over the others, given that all certificates are equal and are fit for purpose. But this is just an example to give you an idea of some of the products which we test. The first one I'll mention is Imison, which is a polystyrene-based product, which is plastered on both sides, and once finished is as good as a solid concrete wall, yet very lightweight, and has several benefits as listed there, including quicker construction, faster construction period, higher specification, lower thermal performance, etc., and it also has the advantage that it uses 95% of unskilled labor, including women, and uses local small, medium, and micro enterprises for various services. It has very good social acceptance within South Africa in the areas where it has been used. The second one, which is an example, not an endorsement, is Robust, which is a very strong system. It has a steel core in the middle with cement on both sides. So very, very strong, just like the name Robust mentions. It also has similar benefits like the previous one, in terms of socioeconomic benefits, just like Innocent. The third one is Kits, quite similar to the Innocent. The only difference is that it has a steel mesh reinforcement in the middle with expanded polystyrene and plastic on the outside. It also has similar benefits, just like the first product I mentioned. The dry walling system, the Rhino Wall, you're all familiar with it. It's used extensively in a lot of the hotels or big offices to partition different rooms and offices. It's a dry walling system made of lightweight drywall to partition the various rooms. It results in a very high quality finish, and it's used extensively not only in South Africa but globally. Gold Flex is a tilt-up reinforced concrete system. which has been used in the one big project in the Hauteng area. Currently, they have another big project within Hauteng. And the advantage is that they offer training to the local people, whereby they go and train the people in the area where they're going to work, teach them how to build the buildings. They erect the concrete panel on the ground and lift it into position with the crane, and results in buildings being built at very high speed and at high quality. So it provides affordable quality housing at a very high speed and at a low cost. This is just, it can also be the area, the Kalfontein project was built in an already built up area. The buildings are quite strong and durable with low maintenance and vermin proof. It has advantages in that it uses local labor as well. And I have just listed a couple of examples of building systems which have AGRIMA certificates for your information. These are just building systems which have AGRIMA certificates for your information. Now, if you'll allow me, honorable members of the select committee, I will now touch briefly on the financial statements for the past financial year. This is actual finances which was expended. As you can see, it's illustrated there, human capital costs, which I will explain later, 4.5, technical, which is operational costs of 1.5, and then you have the infrastructure or the costs which go to the organization work with, which is a CSR of about 1.2 million, giving a total expenditure of about 7.46. Now, if I look at the budget for the last year, we had a budgeted figure of 8.9, and the actual expenditure was actually 7.4. And for this current financial year, the budgeted amount is 9.6, with a commensurate increase of about 7-odd% for the next 2 years. That's 2010 and 2011, etc. So the increase, I will just explain briefly. In preparing the three-year budget, the cost budget, which is the 289 actual expenditure, was used in calculating percentages of each line expenditure in relation to the same period, which is a budget period, and then escalating each line item with the same percentage, presuming the trend remains the same. In other words, our total bottom line budget then increased from year to year by about 7% in line with inflation. Further notes, I'll just explain what the various terminologies mean. The manpower cost includes all costs related to human resources, that salaries, UIF, pension, medical aid, etc. Internal costs are the internal operational costs, which are rental, telephone line, security, etc., etc. And running costs cover all the other operational costs, which are technical assessments, marketing, material, equipment, research, travel, training, etc. Honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, in brief, I've covered what I would say is a presentation of the strategic plan and budget for 2008-09. I have just a few slides which I will let run while I, with your permission, Honorable Chair, receive questions, which shows a few tests and a few products which you can read during the question period. I thank you very much for the opportunity to present. It's a great honor for me to be here today.
Thank you very much, sir. I don't know whether members are ready for any questions. Members are ready, but let me start. Can I start with you? Chief, thank you very much for your presentation. But maybe if you can clarify us. We believe that some of the products which you spoke about include indigenous products, like we had asbestos, which at the end, before that, which was, most of the mining for the asbestos was from South Africa, but which at the end, it was discovered that there are a lot of challenges when you use asbestos concerning the health of the workers who are working there. What are the status quo at the present moment? And then also, concerning the issue of the global warming, you spoke about the road and the stabilizing product. My concern is one, if you visit already, I'm searching for correction. If you go to some of the countries, particularly in the Middle East and the like, in terms of road, they don't use exactly the material which we are using here. And then, in your, because of the environment and the climate which is there, it's not the same which is like our climate. In order to address that, to be ready on that in that regard, what is on the pipeline to be ready, because even our climate is changing, and it needs, sometimes we use the same material which are being used somewhere there. And then the argument, South Africa was established from our own input in 1961. But our little experience is that somehow there is a little bit resistance to some extent to some of the people who are unable or who do not want maybe the integration, which the similar question which is we use or to ask about the involvement of women in particular. And also, if you do have, I mean, if you can maybe clarify us the outlining on the economic in terms of the participation of women in our structure. I'll leave it there. I'll pose it and leave it to other members. Maybe to make some for us. Members, questions, please. Honourable Member Jacobs, I'll start this side and go this side. Followed by Honourable Member Grunewald. Next side, Mama. Okay, let's start this side, Mr. Jacob.
Yeah, Chair, I just want to find out what is the scope of operation of Agreement South Africa? Is it something that they just end up making presentation to us here as a member of Select Committee? Because if we are having this kind of an organization, why do we have these RDP houses, which you build them today, the next day they have been blown off? Its quality is of low standard. Well, how do they intervene in such instances? Because if we're having such a structure, it has to see to it that we have material of high quality. But what is happening, I don't think it's good for our people. I see the slides that have been made there, example of places where it has got involved. But from areas where we come from, those houses are not durable. You build them today, tomorrow, they have been blown off. So that's why I'm asking, what is the area of scope of operation?
Thank you, Baba. Thank you, Honorable Chair. I just want to know, you said that these houses are actually, it is in connection with the previous speaker as well, it is a cheaper type of house we've got here. And why are we not seeing more of these houses built in South Africa? And then I also want to know, what is the government's involvement in supporting you to build these houses? What percentage are you getting from government side? I believe there must be a connection somewhere, one or other way, to help you to build these houses. And I only saw, if we are looking into the budget, your expenditures. What is the profit you are making out of these houses as a company? Thank you.
Mr. Lee?
Thank you, everyone. Good time. Honorable Chair, I just want clarity. I mean, I've been involved with CSR and SABS for decades, and I should have known more about agreements, but I didn't. So
I just need a bit of understanding. The CSIRO does the research. SABS does the testing. For instance, the testing we're seeing up there is done by the SABS, not by agreement, as I understand it. But only the certification then gets done by agreement. And I'm not pronouncing it correctly. There's a foreign language. It's not got a double E, so you can correct me on my pronunciation. But then the relationship between the two, between agreement and these other organizations, CSR, ASA, and SABS. So once the certification is complete, it's then up to the product owners to then sell that product for use in the market. And they use your certificate to say to the buyers of their product that it is a fit-for-purpose product. My question then is, we've talked a lot about housing. I know the SABS, for instance, 15 years ago, did a test on maize bags for me. Your certification is not just on housing, I assume. I just need clarity on it. It's for all products, I assume. Or is it just on housing? Maybe that's where I'm going wrong. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mom,
thank you very much. Let me also thank the presenter, Mr. Odiam, for the presentation, and actually, let me say, I'm glad that today we are having this presentation, because we always see the sign, but today we got the information on what's happening. And what I would like to know is, you know, you've got beautiful pictures here. I remember when we went to hand over houses in Tekwan, in Mpumalanga. You know, there were a group of men and women who took photos like this. So I would like to know from you. You said you train people in the area where they're going to be. You'll correct me if I didn't get you well. But you said you train people in the area where they are going to do the work. But what happens after the people have been trained? What happens to the skills that they have acquired during the development of the area? Because definitely this should be sustainable. And also, I think you remember that there will be a question on women. On the slide that took about SMEs, and then you said including women. If you can, maybe if you've got the information on the involvement of women in all the provinces, can you supply us with that information? And my concern is still also on the houses that have been built. The houses that have been built, the Jefferson, you know, maybe you find sometimes an RDP house is being built before somebody can stay in that house. It's like, you know, fallen off. So in provinces, Agrima, do you have like offices? And then, if possible, in all 9 provinces, can we have the contact so that during our constituency period, we know who to talk to, and when we do oversight, then we know where to refer the issues to. Thank you. And for the last one, the staff establishment, I see you are low. If you can tell since 1961 or 1969, when Agrima was established, can you who is in that office. Thank you, Chair.
Before I allow you to respond, maybe to make a follow-up on what was raised by Mr. John Cox and also Mrs. Tam. You see, coincidentally, I was being a worker before starting with my political involvement. You go to the power station, the type of cement which they use, I'll put an example. Most of the power station underground, there is a sump which is containing of water. And the type of cement which they are using, the more it gets water, it becomes more strong. But when it comes to our own places where we are staying, the cement which are using, I don't know who gives them those type of certificates. You can look houses are falling apart. And while those ones which are they are using the power station, they stay like that. And they go to Pretoria, the union buildings and the like, they stay like that. Why they are aging now? But to go to our own area, it's a shame and disgrace. And lastly, you go to the township, the type of the cement which is, I mean, the tar route, which the material which is being used there. Some of the materials, it is an insult. They take, within a week after they put this particular route, it's gone. But somebody is giving certificates on those particular materials. You go to the main roads, N1, N4, whatever, it's quiet. Lastly, as you're showing this screen, the issue of this, the road in Mpumalanga province. I don't know what type of cement which was used there. Because when they build with construction in terms of the power station and like, you have your Babcocks, LTAs, which are from abroad. I don't know if maybe you can highlight. Thank you very much. Over to you, sir.
Honorable Chairperson, honorable members of the Select Committee, I thank you very much for the questions, which are very insightful. I will respond to them in the sequence in which they were raised, and I thank you for the questions again. The first question regarding asbestos. Asbestos is currently banned and is not being used in construction in South Africa. A lot of indigenous products are used in construction in South Africa. The brick is made from available soil, etc., and etc., etc. In terms of the second question from the Honorable Chairperson regarding road stabilizing products, there's a lot of research and development currently being carried out, and South Africa has actually pioneered in a number of these products. We have currently stabilized two alternative road stabilizers, which can be used as alternatives to the traditional stabilizing agents. These are currently being used extensively. Now, what is in the research, I can give you an example of one or two new products which were developed by the CSIR, which is one of the leading institutions in terms of research and development in the infrastructure, the road area. The thin layer concrete road has been developed in South Africa, which is currently being experimented as part of this massive infrastructure rollout. And the trial runs which have been conducted have been very successful. The other one is a thin layer asphalt. Now, these are thinner layers of than traditional products, but they both work extensively. In the third question was, since 1969, Agrima has been in existence, and there's a resistance to the product. This is due to social lack of social acceptance, but this is currently changing, and we hope that we are seeing more and more products being used extensively. And it's the same resistance other countries overseas experienced before the alternative technologies took over as being the standardized form of construction. In terms of our organogram, within the agency we have a staff complement of 13. In terms of women employees, we have a total of 3 at the moment. We are looking at increasing that number. And in terms of the scope of operation, this is a question regarding whether we work within the RDP houses. RDP houses are built of standardized materials. We do not work in the area of standardized materials. I illustrated in my early slide. We only work with non-standard innovative products. In other words, if it is a new product, therefore we do not work with standardized materials. In terms of the house has been cheap and yet they're not being used, as I mentioned, their acceptance is improving with time. We do get support from the government, yes, but we do not build houses. We get funding from government as a government agency, and we are a non-profit agency. We are a service agency for and on behalf of the Department of Public Works, as an agency carrying out independent technical assessments and testing of non-standardized construction products. We do carry out, yes, we are part of the CSR where we do sit. We are employees of the CSR, so we are an independent agency funded by Public Works, and we work closely with the Bureau of Standards, who actually sit on our board, and we certificate all construction-related products and building systems. So we not only provide certification for products, but also building systems, and the entire construction industry, including road products and related activities. In terms of training, we as an agency, as given the fact that you're very, we do only do independent testing. We do not get involved in the construction or the building, the actual building. You only do the testing and the certification of the product. And the certificate holders then are the ones who go out there and do the testing. The empowerment or the skills development empowers all, including women and youth, as I say. And once people are trained in the area where they've been trained, they can use their skills either within that particular area, or once they are skilled, then they can move elsewhere and get other jobs in other areas where there are projects. Or they can use their skills within to since there will be skills, they can be able to employ themselves or provide work for others using the skills they've learned. The percentage of women in all provinces, I do not have the percentage now, given the fact that the work is done by the certificate holders, not by us as AGRIMA. But I'm sure it can be made available from the certificate holders. In terms of RDP houses being of poor quality, yes, one needs to investigate why the houses do fail. And maybe it is not the product that are failing, but maybe the implementation or the cement mix there's a problem regarding the quality assurance or quality control. We do have offices in Pretoria, and we do have a presence in Port Elizabeth, which I mentioned covers the coastal areas. And the 13 staff members who are there, I am the CEO, and I do have the technical component as well as administrative support. The technical staff members are about 7, and the rest are administrative and communications and related activities. As I mentioned, we need to investigate the reasons for failure, why certain cements which are used in the power stations and on highways are of high quality, and the ones they use in the RDP houses are poor quality. Maybe it's not the cement, maybe it's the mix, maybe it's the scale of the workers, etc. So one needs to find out to investigate the reasons for the failure. And it may not be the failure of the system, but the failure of another nature. I thank you for the questions, and I thank you for the opportunity, and I hope I've been able to address the questions, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members of the Select Committee. Thank you very much.
Okay. Before we come to an end, I wanted to find out from the members whether they do have any questions. Okay, let me give you an opportunity, followed by Mama, you want to be the last one.
Mr. Chair, not personally, but it's quite concerning. The staff component is 13 for a budget of 4 million. If you take the previous presenter, it's a component of 30 people, the 6 million budget. I mean, we need to cut somewhere. Will there be a possibility that Typically, we can have a budget, a detailed budget, especially where the governmental fund is involved. I thank you.
How about you, Mama?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm not quite sure whether maybe I was clear, Mr. Odiom, when I said we are from provinces, and your offices are only in Pretoria and in Port Elizabeth. And like, for example, where I'm sitting, last week during my constituency period, I visited an area where the reservoir actually is leaking and people are not getting water. The water can't come out from the pipe, from the tap. And, they wait until that leakage, like, is full of a little goodsy hole. So, if that's the case in Mpumalanga, who do I talk to go in and actually investigate and check what is really wrong there? Because the people now, as I'm speaking, there is no water. There is no water. And if your offices are only in Pretoria and in Port Elizabeth, it's difficult for us. And you can't tell us who are the contacts in case that then Mpumalanga and all other provinces rather than Pretoria and Port Elizabeth. Actually, it doesn't actually assist us. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, Mama.
Yeah, Chair, I'm not satisfied with the responses that I've received from Mr. Adiambo. This structure was established in 1969, and some of the questions that we have posed to him, they are still going to investigate. RDP have been here for time immemorial. Even before 1994, there were houses that were built by the previous apartheid government. And those houses, they are more durable than the houses that have been built now. And they are still investigating. Do we have to ask questions and then they will investigate? Don't they see that there are problems in the building industry? And also, how do these structures fit to one another? Right now we have the presentation by CBE, we have this agreement board and other structures. How do they fit into one another? Or are they working in silos? Because I think they need to help one another. There must be a coordination system. Seemingly there's no coordination system. Each and every structure is working on its own. Thanks.
Baba.
Thanks for the three questions. We can provide a detailed budget. We do have, apart from the 13 staff members, we do have what we make use of a shared services system within the CSR, whereby the non-technical staff members actually shared activities like finance, human resources, operations management are actually covered under the shared services budget, which adds an additional number of people which are not included in the direct employees of AGMA as an agency. Therefore, the 13 number may be, it covers the direct employees who actually work directly with AGMA, but does not cover the people who work under the shared services. But a detailed budget may be provided as requested. In terms of the reservoir that is leaking, we do have our office in Pretoria, which covers the rest of the country. And from Pretoria office, we do cover the other provinces, which we cannot mention, which are not the coastal provinces. And therefore, our area of operation is on innovative construction products. And if the reservoir is built of standardized materials, it will be not within our area, within our mandate to look at it. Our mandate covers non-standardized construction products, testing the fitness of purpose of non-standard construction products. And it also is the same response for the third question. Yes, it's been in existence since 1969. We only test non-standard products. We do not test standardized products. Therefore, if a standard product fails, it is not our mandate. Our mandate covers only non-standard products. I thank you for the question.
Okay. No, Mr. Otiam. Sometimes it's worrying. I'm just listening to the questions from the members. There is a quite difference between a theory and practical. You see, let's go back to page 4. I wanted to illustrate something on your presentation on impact and achievement. Because we are from the practical situation. On page 4. Okay. You see, I'll put a practical example. You said it's an impact, an achievement. And then 482 certificates have been issued. Is that correct? But the question is that 169 certificates are currently valid. There is no explanation about this achievement. That what have you achieved? Because if you can calculate 169 plus 169, it doesn't form even a half of 482 certificates, which you have been achieved by your department. So where is an achievement? And also, it says that qualifies the concern which is raised by the members. That, you see, to me, sometimes it's very difficult that most of the time we are able to pass some of the budgets and the support of the budgets, but while practically on the ground there's nothing. Maybe if we can clarify that, what have you achieved on that one, in that regard? Because, you see, another thing which is worrying us, most of the materials which you mentioned underneath here, like metals, roof, what else? We're having a lot of, like, IFCO in Newcastle and somewhere. Some of these materials have been manufactured in South Africa. But people are not benefiting out of that. They are getting cheaper material. And then also, I mean, like plastic, whatever, you go to Sasol, it's being manufactured in Sasol, here in South Africa, in the country. And what I call pine, we do have somewhere, but particularly in Zambia, in southern, in the Sadiq. But, you know, we can ask a lot of questions, that why are we suffering with the very cheapest material, while some of these materials are being manufactured here? That we're suffering. And we don't have people who can account. Most of the time when you ask questions, they respond that, I want to investigate. I think something must be done there. Or else, we'll be having serious questions about your own presentation. But because it doesn't help us. And Mama Tembo was asking a to some people, it's a crucial question. To say people are suffering there with this and this and this and this and this and this, the very same material. Who's doing the inspection is from the section or whatever. Who authorized those certificates? Is your section or whatever? How can we continue to issue such certificates while there's nothing on the ground? And at the end, we call it an achievement. Here, I think, as I've indicated earlier on, there is a quite different with the present juncture and the old system where we're dealing with an Exchequer Act, whereby people were just accounting. But this nowadays is PFMA, whereby we must proper accounting.
We don't want to regret even ourselves when we leave Parliament that after the period of 5 years, that when our kids ask us that, what have you done for us? It was very difficult. We're still investigating. We're still in up until when? I think something must be done there. Because even the question which I've asked you is very difficult to understand it. You call it an achievement. You should quite a number of certificates, but the only certificates which are valid are few. What about the others? Do you have proper system which is able you to account on this in that regard? Or you just issue certificate, no follow up. Issue certificate, no follow up. I'll pose it there before I close.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Agma, I'll just maybe go to the previous slide, which illustrates the project development cycle. We, from research, you test the product, and once there's 3, 4, 5 or more suppliers of the same product, then the suppliers get together, industry gets together, and develops the standard. Therefore, products evolve from Agma certificate to standardized products. Therefore, they fall off the list of a valid certificate and become standardized products. Hence, the number of total certificates issued and valid certificates is different. I'll just repeat that again. Once, from research, a product is tested, it's an innovative product, it's new, it gets an Agma certificate, the supplier goes and manufactures it. Once there's 3, 4, 5, or 6, a number of suppliers, industry gets together, they develop standards, and it goes and it is manufactured as an ongoing standard. Therefore, the certificates fall away. In other words, the use of the certificate has been outlived. So in the product development cycle, we operate in the middle section here, the green section. Once a product becomes a standardized product, there are standards written for it. It's a standardized product. It's no longer innovative. Therefore, the certificate is no longer in use. Hence, the number of certificates issued is 482 and 169 are valid. These are the ones which are innovative or are currently valid. Several products, for example, the metal roof tiles, when they first came in, they were new, the Harvey tile in the 90s. It is a thin metal tile, unlike the thick concrete tile. And the first people came, Harvey tile, they got a certificate. Now there are several other suppliers. Soon there'll be a standard written for metal roof tiles, and the products will fall off our list. Therefore, the total number of certificates will come down. It is not that the products are no longer there, but now it has become common practice and is therefore used as a standardized product. In terms of the other question regarding our presence in other provinces, yes, we do operate. Our budgetary constraints allow us to operate within one particular office. But we do cover the whole country from our offices where we are located. I think I've answered the two questions which are raised. I hope I've explained why the number of certificates is less, the valid certificates is less than the total number of certificates which have been issued. And this is the way all similar independent testing agencies in the world work. They are a method of facilitating the introduction of innovative technologies to the market, safe introduction of innovative technologies to the market to allow them to be used as standardized products. They allow for advancements or improvements in construction products and systems by carrying out independent testing to ensure the fitness of purpose of non-standardized construction products and building systems to be safely introduced into the construction market. I've given a few examples of the metal roof tile, the alternative road stabilizers, the thin layer concrete, the thin layer asphalt. These are all new building systems or new products which enhance or improve the quality by allowing improvement in construction. And therefore, the total number of valid certificates is less than the total number of active certificates. Because once the number of suppliers are there, then the product becomes a standardized product and standards are rated for it. Thank you.
Okay. Colleagues, but I will be not doing a justice if I don't allow Mr. Feldman, Honorable Member Feldman, to ask a question. Then I think that will be is going to be a last question to Honorable Member. Mr. Feldman.
Mr. Chair, I just wonder for the presenter. I think the problem lies with let's say the expiring of the certificate. I mean, I can go on for 10 years. I know there's a watchdog. Okay, now the product is standardized, so it's accepted, it's good. Now we get the global economic meltdown. Instead of using the 10 taxes amended, we use two. Who's going to follow up that? So it means the certificate was approved. They're working with it now after 10 years and we're checking it up. I think there must be a follow-up somewhere. I thank you.
Okay. Honorable Mr. Tiambo.
Thank you for the question, Mr. Hoffman. Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, Agrima carries out quality inspections of all certificate holders. We carry out inspections during evaluation phase where we visit not only the manufacturing, we visit where he gets his materials, we manufacture the, we do a quality assurance inspection in terms of ISO 9001 and ISO 14001 environmental and quality management system to ensure that the quality is from cradle to grave is assessed. In other words, from where it gets the material to where to the final laying point in where it is fixed is assessed. We look at the quality at the manufacturing point, transport, installation, and ongoing use until the product is finalized and safely disposed of. We look at environmental impact assessment as well. Now, we do that assessment, quality inspection, during the assessment phase, during the testing phase, and also after the certificate has been awarded. We do the annual inspection on each and every certificate holder at least once and whenever else we deem it necessary. And we also carry out a three-yearly review. The three-yearly review is a comprehensive quality assessment to ensure that the certificate, as was awarded 3 years ago, is still being manufactured in the same way. So the quality aspect, we pay great attention in terms of the international standards of quality assessment. Thank you very much.
Okay. Honorable member, ladies and gentlemen, I think that will be the end of our discussions or deliberation. I'd like to thank you very much, Mr. Odhiambo. Maybe to trouble yourself to come to us. Thank you very much. But you must be in the position as well that if they will request you, maybe to come back, to be able to come back. Because, you know, as we were asking some of these questions, to us, it doesn't mean that after your presentation, we'll just stride away all these papers. No. For us to get more information and go in deeper than this, so that we request you for the next round, maybe to seek for clarity, so that it can be on the right track. Because what we have realized sometimes, some of the entities and some of the work, they run away from the government. They work very far from the government. So it is our responsibility to make sure that people are working very close to the government and also not leaving the masses behind. They're bringing the government to the masses. So that is part of our responsibility. So, by saying that, with that note, thank you very much for your presentation. And then, thank you to the department as well. Colleagues, in my
our program, I think we're left to an only one item, which is item number two consideration, and adopting of the meeting. I think we can relieve the department so that we focus on this last item. Okay, only one item. Honourable members, let's go straight to the last item, which is the consideration and adopting of the minutes. Do you have all the minutes, which is dated 1st September 2009, all of you? Okay. Can we start? Let's go to page 1. I'll be slow. Okay, let's come to page 2. Page 2, okay, ma'am.
I think the spelling of Shosholoza.
Thank you. Also, what I'll maybe request on paragraph 2, Cape Town International Airport, not Air.